The sound of a steel door closing drew Anya's attention, and she turned to see the biggest Islander she'd yet seen walk into the arena. In his hand, he held a nail-studded club. Anya, of course, was unarmed.
Gotta love a fair fight.
Anya ran forward to confront him. He didn't acknowledge the cheers of the crowd in any way, but simply lumbered straight at Anya as she moved forward to greet him, although she suspected that they had two different concepts of just who the winner of this battle was going to be. The Islander ran straight at her, swinging his club at the last moment in an attempt to wipe her out with one crushing blow. Anya ducked underneath the blow, letting the club pass harmlessly over her head as she rushed in and delivered a powerful kick to the inside of his knee. This time, it had about as much success as kicking a tree trunk, maybe less. Anya spun, intending to follow through by coming back in and attacking the other leg, but her opponent was much quicker for his size than she had expected. He was already lashing out with a backhand that caught her square in the chest, lifting her off her feet and dumping her in the sand a few yards away.
Wow, that hurt!
Anya struggled to her feet as she heard the whistling sound of the club coming her way, and she threw herself to the side, narrowly avoiding getting knocked into next week. She rolled when she hit, putting some distance between herself and her opponent. When she got back to her feet, she had a handful of the sand lining the floor clutched in her left hand. The Islander was already moving in, bringing the club whistling downward again. This time, as Anya rolled away, she timed the blow, noting how long it took for him to recover and lash out again. When he was still in the middle of recovering from that second blow, Anya darted in and threw the sand in his face. He pulled his head back, but the damage was already done. Momentarily blinded, he swung the club he was holding around him in a circle, trying to trip her up. She jumped lightly over it and twisted her body into a spinning crescent kick, slamming toward his collarbone. The blow never landed. The Islander dropped the club, grabbed her foot in midair, and yanked her toward him, intending to smother her in his grasp. Anticipating that very move, Anya let him draw her closer and then lashed out. She tried to smash the side of her hand into the soft, unprotected flesh of his throat, only to have him drop his chin at the last moment, deflecting the blow. It went around and around like that, with neither of them gaining the upper hand, but causing a number of minor injuries along the way. Anya knew she could draw her sword at any time, but doing so would reveal her secret, not only to all of the Islanders sitting in the stands, but also to Krugman and Schnell. That was something she wanted to avoid at all costs. So instead of simply skewering the big guy where he stood, Anya was going to have to whittle away at him piece by piece until she could deliver the final blow that sent him to the ground. She was moving away from another of his strikes when she remembered what her captor had said at the entrance to the arena. Watch his left foot. She did so. Every time the Islander prepared himself for a strike, he pivoted on his left foot, anchoring it in place to give him as much torque as possible. Anya knew she could use that to her advantage.
Thank you, whatever your name is.
They circled each other warily again, Anya biding her time, and the Island warrior doing the same.
She's no match for you.
The Islander rushed in at her. Rather than skipping backward out of reach, which had been her modus operandi for the entire fight, Anya did the exact opposite. Rushing forward, she kicked that unsupported leg with everything she had. It folded like a house of cards. The warrior dropped to one knee, leaving his face and head unprotected. Anya chose that moment to leap into the air, spinning at the apex of her leap. She lashed out with a perfectly executed heel kick that struck the warrior in the side of the temple. He lay unmoving on the arena floor. Anya turned and saw the surprised expression on both Krugman's face and Schnell's.
Guess I'm telling the truth. Maybe it's time you put Krugman to the same test.
Whatever Schnell was going to say in return was interrupted as the door to his observation platform burst open and four men with submachine guns in their hands crowded into the narrow space and held their guns on everyone in there, including Schnell. To the gunman's surprise, but not Anya's, the old Nazi let his displeasure be known.
Was ist
das? This, dear Colonel, is a military coup. If you do as you're told, no one has to get hurt. Least of all you.
What do you want?
The gold, of course.
I'm not giving you anything.
Krugman drew the gun at his hip and shot the old man in the foot.
Shut up. Come here before I put the next bullet in your head.
Schnell snapped his mouth shut and hobbled over to Krugman, who passed him over to one of his men. As Schnell was being led out of the observation booth at gunpoint, Krugman nodded at one of the men who stood behind him with a submachine gun. That man withdrew a walkie-talkie from his pocket and radioed someone else. Seconds later, the door her first opponent entered through swung open, and three of Krugman's men entered the arena. All of them were armed with a club or some form of bladed weapon, and they used them to laconically salute Anya.
I'm surprised at you, Anya. I thought for sure you would figure it out long before this. Every time I thought you had, you ended up surprising me with your blind ignorance. Which is really too bad, as I assumed you'd be a better opponent than that.
Come on down here and I'll show you just how good I am.
She didn't take her eyes off the three men standing on the other side of the arena.
Sorry, dear, but I don't have time to waste on such petty problems. While you lie dying there in the sand, I want you to think about the fact that not one, but two of your friends are now in my custody. Oh, I'm going to enjoy using them in new and interesting ways.
With that parting remark, Krugman left the observation deck. Down below, on the arena sand, Anya watched her opponents move in. With Krugman and Schnell no longer around, Anya decided it was time to even the odds somewhat. She reached into the otherwear. Feeling far more confident, Anya moved in to face her attackers. The three men split up as they got closer, moving to surround her and make it so she couldn't keep her eyes on all three of them at once. Immediately, Anya picked one of her attackers and charged directly at him, hoping to put him down before the other attackers had a chance to move in on her unprotected back. As she leaped forward, her attacker tried to backpedal and give time for his allies to close in on Anya from behind. Unfortunately for him, he'd never trained on sand and didn't know how to move in it gracefully. The heel of his shoe caught in the sand behind him.
Whoa.
Anya rushed forward and skewered him through the chest. The ferocity of her attack gave the other two men pause, but only for a moment. Clearly, they thought they were better than the man who had been killed, so they moved in with confidence, weapons at the ready, determined to complete their assignment. Anya waited for one of the men to move in close, trying to draw her into an attack, and thereby give the other man a chance to strike at her from behind. It was a simple plan, and might even have worked if Anya didn't have a plan of her own. She played along with what they were doing, pretending not to know that they were playing a game of cat and mouse with her. When the man in front of her began backpedaling to get away from her, just as her previous attacker had done, Anya abruptly spun and charged the man behind her. He had been expecting to rush forward and attack her from behind, and therefore actually took several more steps in her direction. Before he realized she wasn't moving away, she rushed directly at him. The killer tried to stop his forward momentum, but it was already too late. Then she turned away to face her third and final opponent, while his buddy lay bleeding to death in the warm sand behind her. This time, Anya moved to the center of the arena and stood there waiting.
If you want a piece of me, you're gonna have to come get it.
Her opponent hesitated, but only for a moment. Apparently, his fear of punishment at Krugman's hands was more daunting than the idea of dying right then and there, for he advanced on her slowly and carefully, exchanging blow after blow, but taking no chances. Anya bided her time, waiting for an opening, until she realized that the thug in front of her was deliberately stalling, no doubt to let Krugman get away. The thought of that man escaping the hand of justice was almost too much to bear. They struck and parried, then Anya pretended to lose her balance and stumbled backward. When the man overreached in an effort to pin her down, Anya trapped his sword with her own and then flung it away, disarming him and leaving him defenseless.
Oh, look, I am just coming!
Anya lunged forward, driving her sword through the man's shoulder. He fell backward, with Anya tearing the blade out as he fell. She quickly straddled him and pressed the edge of the blade against his throat.
I want some answers, and I want them now!
5 minutes later, Anya moved cautiously through the tunnels, trying to find her way back to where she and Garin had been kept prisoner. She did her best to avoid running into any islanders, and the one time she couldn't, she left the young man in a darkened corner after a swift blow to his head with the flat of her sword. After several minutes of stumbling around in the tunnels, she found the room she was looking for. Garin, however, was no longer there.
They took him away.
Anya whirled to find the colonel's right-hand man standing there, the one who'd kicked her mercilessly.
What do you mean they took him away?
Just what I said. Shortly after you entered the arena, the Dark One's men came and took him away. One of them said something about returning to the boat, but that was all that I overheard.
Why are you helping me?
Is it not said that the enemy of my enemy is my friend?
Yes, but it is also said that you should keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
It would seem that you are going to have to decide to trust me on nothing more than the wisdom of our elders.
Fat chance of that, buddy.
Anya tried to push past him, but he reached out and stopped her.
Listen to me a moment. I believe that I can help you.
Help me? I'm not even sure I can trust you.
My people have been controlled by others for far too long. Now, we may finally act. You have given us that chance. We will give something to you.
And you think that if you help me, I will help you free your people from the yoke of this man and those who support him?
Yes.
She would, too. That's just the kind of person she was. But first Garin, and then Doug.
You've got a deal. Take me to the elevator.
She was convinced that Krugman would return to the boat he had talked about to get reinforcements and to begin loading the gold as his men removed it from the mountain hideaway. If she could get aboard that boat, she could rescue Garin and possibly discover where Krugman was keeping Doug. After that, who knew? First things first. She headed through the underground tunnels with her co-conspirator in the lead.
What do I call you?
My name is Matahi.
Okay, and you can call me Anya.
Several times along the journey, they passed other islanders, and each time Matahi had a quick conversation with them, no doubt to invent some reason the colonel's prisoner was roaming around free. At last, when she thought she couldn't take any more of this underground passage, they emerged onto the ledge where the elevator hung. Neither basket was there, more proof that Krugman had not remained within the facility, but had in fact returned to the top of the caldera. Since he was most familiar with how the elevator worked, Anya let Matahi call one of the cars down, while she tried to work out a plan for what to do when they caught up with Krugman. Unfortunately, she was pretty much out of ideas, at least productive ones, in that regard. It took nearly 20 minutes for the car to reach them. When it did, Anya and Matahi climbed in and then shut the gate behind them. Matahi took control of the crank and began to wind it, starting the elevator car on its long ride to the top of the caldera. Anya spent the time worrying about Garin and wondering if Doug was still alive. They looked around frantically, trying to spot who was shooting at them.
Look! There!
About 100 yards above them, the second car was on its way down. In the basket were two men, both of whom were leaning over the side and pointing rifles toward Anya and her companion.
What do we do?
Duck!
They were in trouble, and Anya knew it. As long as the other basket was allowed to descend or ascend, then the men in it could fire at them at will until they killed them. If they wanted to survive, they had to take out those riflemen. There was only one problem. Neither Matahi nor Anya had any kind of weapon. They were going to have to do it the hard way.
How quickly can you get us level with them?
Level? Won't that make it easier for them to shoot us?
Not if I can dissuade them.
And how are you going to manage that?
Let me worry about that. For now, just get us up there.
Shaking his head at the craziness of the idea, but doing it anyway, Matahi crouched lower in the basket and focused on turning the crank, resuming their upward motion. While he did that, Anya tried to figure out what it was going to take to get the basket rocking back and forth far enough that she could get close to the other one. Thankfully, the men in the second basket were terrible shots. As the firing continued, Anya walked back and forth from one side of the basket to the other, using her weight to get it to start swinging like a pendulum.
Ooh, what are you doing?
There were no safety belts, and it was a long way to the bottom, or a relatively short trip should a person fall.
I'm making us a more difficult target for them to hit.
They won't have to hit us if you make us fall out! Stop that!
We have to take out that other basket or they can just sit there and fire at us until we're finally hit!
You are insane!
No, I just want to live!
You've got a crazy way of showing it!
As they got higher and the other basket came lower, the gunshots were starting to come closer.
Ow!
Matahi suffered a cut to his cheek when a bullet caused some fragments of rock to explode from the cliff face beside him. If the basket hadn't been moving side to side, the shooter probably would have taken them both out by now. Anya ducked lower, but kept moving back and forth. It wouldn't be long now. Finally, the baskets were at the point where they were almost parallel to each other. She was only going to get one chance at this. Anya waited until they were swinging away from the second basket to quickly explain her plan to Matahi.
When the basket swings the other way, there will be a moment at the farthest edge of our swing when we will be perfectly lined up with the other basket. That will be our moment to act. No matter what happens, keep the basket swinging. Got it?
The islander nodded, clearly scared out of his wits by the swaying of the cage, but determined to handle it and be of use to her. Anya admired his bravery. A person had to be a little insane to attempt what she was about to do, but frankly, she didn't see any way around it. The cage completed its swing to the outside and started back in the other direction. Anya crouched beside the side wall and watched the other cage as they rapidly swung toward it. Anya gritted her teeth and ordered herself to resist the urge to duck, for she needed to be ready to move. Anya's cage was headed toward the other at full speed, and the shooter finally decided that discretion was the better part of valor and ducked behind the walls of his own cage. If the two collided, he didn't want to be knocked over the side. It was exactly the move Anya had been counting on. The cage reached the farthest point of its swing. For a moment, it hung there, directly opposite the other. Anya jumped to her feet, snatched her sword from the otherwhere, and slashed at the cables holding the other cage up. For just an instant, she was poised there, sword outstretched, staring into the eyes of the shooter as he crouched next to his partner near the crank, the rifle in his hands pointed directly at her. The cage started to swing back in the other direction, pulling her a fraction of an inch to the side as the bullet whipped through her hair without striking anything solid, fortunately not blowing her head to smithereens. Then they were headed back in the other direction, and Anya released the sword. She watched as the other basket began to tilt downward, the cable holding it in place no longer in one piece. Anya could see the shooter and his partner grabbing for the side of the cage, not quite understanding yet that they weren't falling out of it, but that it was falling along with them. Anya stared as they dropped out of sight. She turned and found Matahi peering at her in horror.
What did you do?
Taught them that shooting at us is a very bad idea.
She glanced over the side of the cage in the direction the other had fallen, and then amended her statement.
Make that was a very bad idea.
After the confrontation on the elevators, the hike through the jungle was anticlimactic. Matahi led her to safety with unerring accuracy. Twice they stopped to refresh themselves from the stalks of certain plants that her companion pulled up and cut open. Anya was glad he was there. She would have been dying of thirst by the time they made it to the lagoon if she had to do this alone. Dawn was only starting to creep over the horizon when they reached the trees sheltering the beach. Anya could see the hulk of the U-boat, and beyond that, anchored in the cove, was the Reliant. But they weren't the only two boats out there. A massive yacht was now moored a few yards away from the Reliant. It flew a Swiss registration flag and had five decks plus a large helipad on the aft section of the upper deck. It had its running lights on, and in the moonlight it was easy to see the ship's name, Redemption, was painted in red on the side.
Figures.
She could see a handful of guards patrolling the decks, but this far out in the Pacific she expected that discipline would be lax. She should be able to sneak aboard without too much trouble. Then it was just a matter of locating Garin, getting him off the boat, and locating Krugman so that she could figure out where Doug was being held. Nothing to it. She turned to Matahi and put out her hand.
Thank you. I couldn't have gotten this far without you.
He shook her hand.
You will be all right from here.
Yes.
She didn't really know, of course, but she didn't want to endanger him any further.
All right, then. I will return to tend to my people. Good luck to you, Anya Creed.
And then, like a ghost, he was gone, disappearing into the jungle behind her. Anya waited a few minutes and then made her way down to the water's edge. She stayed in a crouch in case there was a sentry on the beach that she hadn't seen, but the view seemed clear and she didn't run into anyone before she reached the lagoon. She guessed that the yacht was about 50 yards offshore, which would be a good swim, but not a particularly trying one. She sat on the sand, took off her shoes, and left them near the pier. She eased into the water, then gently began swimming in the direction of the yacht. The water was cool, but not cold, and thanks to the protected nature of the lagoon, it was flat as a sheet. She swam first to the Reliant, which was moored closer to shore than the Redemption, and hung on the side for a moment, listening. It didn't sound as if anyone was aboard, so she swam around to the diver's platform at the back and pulled herself onto it. She knelt there, listening, making sure that she was alone. Satisfied that there was no one else aboard, she crossed the cockpit to the companionway and slipped down into the darkness of the lower deck. She grabbed some food from the galley fridge, gulping it down with a glass of water. The food revitalized her, gave her the energy she knew she would need for the next step of her plan. She went back up on deck, this time carrying Garin's binoculars, and spent some time studying the activity across the lagoon aboard the Redemption. She made out four guards, two on the top deck and one each on the second and third decks. They were carrying automatic rifles, but she couldn't tell what make from this distance. They appeared to be wearing some kind of uniform as well, but it was hard to tell exactly what. A glance at the battery-powered clock in the cockpit told her that it was coming up on 4 a.m. The sun would be up in another 2 hours. She needed to get aboard the yacht, find Garin, and get him out before the sun came up at 6:30. She wasn't sure she could do it. Given the size of the boat, it might take her that long just to search two decks. Hopefully, she'd get lucky sooner rather than later. Hopefully, both Garin and Doug were still alive. 5 minutes later, she was clad in a bathing suit and swim fins, lowering herself into the water at the rear of the boat. She set out swimming for the big yacht, using the fins to give her more power underwater without the noise that kicking her feet on the surface would have made. 10 minutes later, she reached her destination. It looked much bigger from her current vantage point down at the waterline. She'd hoped to be able to just pull herself over the side, but the boat rode much higher in the water than she'd expected, and the railing was several feet out of reach. She began to make a slow circuit of the craft, looking for another option she could use to get aboard. She finally found what she needed on the port side aft. The launch ramp had a cigarette boat currently stored on it, but there was plenty of room for her to pull herself out of the water. She took off her fins and walked up the ramp to the lower deck. Anya moved as quietly as she could, not wanting to call attention to herself until it was absolutely necessary, at which point she intended to make as much noise as possible to help cover her escape with Garin. She began quietly opening doors and checking the rooms beyond, not knowing where Krugman was keeping his captive. Why he hadn't just killed Garin earlier, Anya didn't know. She supposed it was because Krugman had decided, from all he'd seen during their time together, that Garin was wealthy, and perhaps he could ransom him to someone, his family, or the board of directors of one of his multinational corporations.
Maybe Krugman's hedging his bets in case I kill his henchmen. Is Garin merely being used as bait? That's a possibility, too.
The third room she checked happened to be the engine room, and she saw that it had a map of the boat hung on the bulkhead. She spent a few minutes memorizing the layout of the boat as best she could. Who knew when that information might come in handy? She had just opened the door across from the engine room when she heard footsteps coming in her direction. She slipped into the dark room and pushed the door most of the way closed, leaving only a little crack through which she could watch and listen. The guards stopped in the middle of the passageway outside the room in which Anya was hiding. One of them produced a pack of cigarettes, European by the look of them, and passed both a cigarette and a lighter to his buddy. They lit up and stood around, either on break or just not caring that they might get caught. They spoke in English, but Anya couldn't pinpoint their accent, which meant they could be from anywhere. After first discussing British football, things got interesting.
We came back with two prisoners. Put one in the deck two storage closet, the other in the suite next to his.
A closet? As if there are no other rooms available.
The men finished their cigarettes and moved on. Anya then slipped out of the room and returned to the engine room next door. She went straight to the diagram of the boat, found the storage closet she thought they were talking about, and worked out a path to get to it that didn't leave her too exposed. She moved to the rear of the boat and climbed the steps to the deck above, hiding for a few minutes in a shadowed alcove until the guard passed by. She knew from watching their routine from the Reliant that she had 6.5 minutes before the guard completed his sweep and returned to the same spot. She pulled open the door to the interior hallway and quickly but quietly padded along on her bare feet, counting doors as she went. Reaching it, she tried the handle. It was locked, which wasn't unexpected.
Garin, are you in there?
She couldn't tell what the person was saying, but there was definitely someone inside.
If you can hear me, get back from the door. I'm gonna break it open, and I don't want you to get hurt in the process.
She gave him a moment, and then reached into the otherwhere for her sword. She inserted the point between the door jamb and the door itself, then levered it down and out. She glanced at her watch. 3.5 minutes to go. She opened the door and stepped inside. It was a linen closet, lined with towels and sheets. Pressed up against the far wall, only his upper body visible in the light, was a man in dirty clothes with a hood over his head. Anya hurried over to him and pulled off the hood.
Doug!
Doug Morrell sat there blinking with his hands and feet tied together and a gag tied around his mouth. Anya fought with the knot for a second and then managed to get it free.
You gotta get out of here. It's a trap.
A trap? For whom?
For you!
Doug tried to stand up, but his feet were still tied together, and he would have toppled over if Anya hadn't caught him.
Hang on.
She bent and used the sword to slash through his bonds. She did the same with those on his hands and wrists before helping him to his feet, taking care with his injured hand. He looked to be in fairly decent shape for a man who had been held prisoner for more than 2 weeks. His face was bruised, and 3 of his fingers were broken, but it appeared that they were feeding him regularly and had tended to his injuries. Anya was so glad to see him that she did something she very rarely did. She pulled him close and gave him a big hug. Doug squirmed and tried to get free, which only went to show her just how agitated he actually was.
I'm serious. You have to leave. This whole thing has been a setup to get you here. He said something about wanting the sword, which, at a guess, I'd say is the one you're holding in your hands. What the heck are you doing with the sword, anyway?
Yep, that was Doug, all right. Non-stop talk that jumped from subject to subject. It was good to have him back. Now all she had to do was get him off the boat.
He wants the sword, huh? He'll have to come and get it, then.
Don't mind if I do.
Something jabbed into Anya's neck. She spun. Paul Krugman stood in the doorway of the closet, a dart gun in one hand. Anya reached up and found the dart embedded in her neck. She opened her mouth to say something, but the darkness claimed her before she could utter a word. 3 hours later, Anya came to with a pounding headache and an awful taste in her mouth.
Here, drink this.
A glass of water was placed against her lips.
Easy, easy now. Those trinks play havoc on a person's stomach. You don't want to be spitting it all up again right away.
She turned her head to see Garin standing there with the glass of water.
More?
Please.
He gave her some and then let her take the glass herself. Anya looked around, saw Doug sitting on a couch nearby.
Where are we?
Locked up in the stateroom aboard Krugman's yacht. Son of a gun is probably as rich as I am, given the size of this thing.
He wants more than the gold we already found for him.
Garin leaned in.
I can guess. He wants the sword, too.
Yeah, well, he can't have it.
So he noticed. He thought he had you dead to rights in that closet, what with you standing there sword in hand and everything. As soon as those tranks hit your system, though, the sword vanished right in front of him, as if it had never been there. Boy, was he angry.
Good. Serves him right.
Garin walked away to stare out the window at Wolf Island.
Yes and no. Good, because he doesn't have the sword yet. Bad, because he's unlikely to give up until he gets it.
We'll just have to disabuse him of that notion, won't we?
Garin nodded, but didn't say anything more. When Anya felt a little better, she went over and talked to Doug a bit, asking how he was feeling and if he wanted to talk about what had happened. None of the story was particularly original, as it turned out. He'd been heading to where he'd parked his car down the street from his office when a plain white van pulled up and asked if he could help with directions. Doug had stopped, the doors to the van opened, and he'd found himself being hustled inside before he could even call for help. His captors had kept him in a safe house for a few days and then flown him halfway around the world, where they had finally boarded the boat to come here. That was all he'd seen or heard until his kidnapper had busted in a few hours ago, talking about a magical sword and what he could do if he had it in his control. Then he questioned Doug about it. Doug was punched around a bit when he told the man that he had no idea what he was talking about. That's when his captor had mentioned Anya's name and locked Doug in the storage closet, believing she would come for him. Which, as it turned out, he was right about. Now they were all stuck.
We're not stuck. Trust me on that one.
She tried the door handle. Locked, as Garin had said, but she wasn't Garin.
Hey! I want to talk with Krugman. I want to talk to Krugman.
She kept it up for several minutes until someone came to the door.
Pipe down, will ya, and I'll tell the boss you want to talk.
Not too long after that, the door unlocked and a pair of guards stood outside.
You, Anya Creed, out. The Major wants to see you.
Now hold on, she's not going anywhere alone.
Well, I guess it's a good thing for us that he wants all of you then. Get going, all of you.
The guards took them up another level and out to the bow, where there was a large open area that was sometimes used as a tennis court and sometimes as Krugman's personal training and practice area. Krugman was there, dressed in a white fencing suit, a blade in his hand. Schnell was there as well, sitting in the shade under a sun umbrella, a fruity-looking drink in his hand. He was still dressed in his ancient SS uniform, with his foot bandaged, and looking decidedly out of place on the modern ship. The guards dragged Garin and Doug over to some folding chairs on the other side of the training area. They pushed Anya out in the center, facing Krugman.
Anya, how good of you to join us.
Whatever, Krugman. I'm not in the mood for your games.
Oh, but what fun those games have been these past few weeks. I must say, seeing you in action tonight was even more amazing than I imagined. I stuck around, you know, to watch the fight with my men. You cannot imagine my complete surprise when that sword appeared from thin air.
Anya didn't say anything.
I had heard the rumors that you had an almost mystical way of finding lost cities and hidden treasures. But I must admit, I was more than a bit skeptical that you could pull it off. I needed to be sure that you had just the right motivation to keep pushing you forward. That's where I ran into some problems, you see. You don't have any family. Don't have any friends either, not real ones. No one that I could snatch off the street and threaten in order to get you to do what needed to be done. No one, except that pathetic producer. Even then, I didn't think it would work. Why would she care about him? I asked myself, and all of my answers were lacking. But I went through with the plan anyway. If it didn't work, I knew I could always fall back on threatening a child, or even better, a whole school of them, to get you to cooperate. But to my utter surprise, my plan worked even better than I thought possible. You were like a mother bear protecting her cubs. And the way you went after the task at hand, such focus, such dedication. I applaud you.
How'd you do it?
Do what exactly?
Make the calls to me when you were sitting right there beside me the whole time. It wasn't you, was it? Just one of your flunkies?
Oh, the first time it was me, all right. After our afternoon diving adventure, you wanted to clean up before dinner. And that gave me plenty of time to make the call once I knew my team had picked up the bait back in New York. That sound of your voice when you realized it was all true.
Anya took a step toward him, her anger burning red hot. He eyed her from his standing position, and suddenly she knew that was exactly what he wanted, for her to call the sword and attack. He stood on the balls of his feet, practically vibrating with anticipation. She stopped and threw out another question to distract him.
And the diver in the Alps? Was that you too?
No. Someone I hired to do the job. I thought I might be able to continue from there on my own, but as it happened, that wasn't the case. And I was actually quite pleased it worked out that way after all.
And the night of the storm, you were signaling this boat, weren't you?
That was my one mistake. As you suspect, I was out on deck, signaling my team, when that stupid boom swung free and knocked me right off the boat. I found it deliciously ironic later to think that if it hadn't been for you and Garin, I would have drowned before finding the island. Fortunate that you both were there, wasn't it?
Yeah, very fortunate.
So here we are at last, at the end of our journey together.
Is it now?
I want that sword.
You can't have it.
Even if it costs your two friends over there their lives?
Even then.
There was no way she was giving up the sword to a monster like the one standing in front of her. Garin knew that. Doug, well, she'd done what she could. Almost made it, too. Krugman snapped his fingers and the guards pulled out their guns and pointed them at Garin's and Doug's heads.
Anya, what's going on?
She didn't even look. Paul eyed her for a long while and then waved his hand again.
You really would sacrifice your friends to keep that blade from me, wouldn't you?
Yes.
It must be some special blade.
It is.
May I see it?
No.
Why not?
Because it's not a toy to be trifled with.
Come. Let's at least be honest with each other, Anya. You used that sword to pop the lock on a linen closet. If that's not trifling with it, then I don't know what is.
That was my using the sword to save the life of an innocent. That is never a trifling matter.
Paul walked around her, watching her, enjoying his power over her. Anya knew that was what he was doing, so she stayed perfectly still, not letting him rile her a second time.
I'll tell you what. I propose a little contest. Just you and me. The stakes will be your lives.
Here it comes. Wait for it. Let him think it's his idea.
Yes. Let's you and me have a little contest. Your swordsmanship against mine. Winner takes all.
What does that mean?
If I beat you, you relinquish the sword to me. If you beat me, I let the three of you go free.
Anya couldn't lose, not really. Besting Paul would mean another threat to the world eliminated. If she herself was bested, the sword would vanish back into the otherwhere, never to be drawn again.
Agreed.
At last we get to the good stuff.
Anya turned her back, and when she turned around again, she had her sword in hand. Paul's eyes widened, as did those of the aged Nazi seated behind him. One of Paul's flunkies walked over with a custom-made sword case. He laid it on the table, undid the clasps, and opened it. He stepped back out of the way once he had done so. Paul walked over and drew a gleaming katana from within the case. He swished it through the air a few times, getting a feel for it, and then walked back toward Anya.
The only rules for this match are that there aren't any rules.
On the last word, he spun and leaped into the air, the leap designed to hide the direction of the sword strike after he switched the blade from one hand to the other. It was an impressive move, and it might have worked on a lesser opponent. But Anya had been carrying her blade for a long time now, and she had learned to trust its instincts. She expected treachery from Paul, and so when he lashed out, fully expecting to end the fight with a single blow, Anya's blade was there to meet his own. As they stood eye to eye, Anya did the only thing she'd been wanting to do since yesterday afternoon. The look of outrage that crossed his features as she spun away was worth all the gold in Hitler's little hideaway.
You!
You'll have to do much better than that if you want to beat me, Paul.
He wiped his face and came after her with a vengeance. He attacked her with ferocious energy, trying everything he could to simply overpower her defenses with brute strength. Anya deflected every move. She was like a dervish herself, spinning and turning, jumping and leaping, using the blade in a purely defensive fashion to keep Paul from scoring a blow. He wanted to kill her. It was in his eyes, if not his hands, and she could not, would not allow him to succeed. Far more than her life was at stake. Despite Paul's savage attacks, it was Anya who drew first blood. As he spun away from a series of brutal strikes, her blade seemed to dance on its own. It slipped between the blows like a striking snake, leaving a thin cut along his cheek.
What?
He stopped, stepped back. He brought his other hand to his face and felt the blood there. If Anya had been thinking clearly, she would have simply lunged forward and thrust her sword up to its hilt in his chest. But his strange behavior had her momentarily stymied, and by the time she had her wits about her, he was on guard once more.
First blood to you.
In the next instant, the blade came down and his other hand rose. Anya threw herself to the side. The one-shot Derringer, hidden in the sleeve of his fencing jacket, went off, the bullet slashing through the air quicker than any sword blade. Anya's instant decision to throw herself to the side saved her life, as the shot lashed across the outside of her thigh rather than finding a home in her chest, as it had been intended. She hit the ground, rolled, and came back up again, finding that the leg hurt like hell but would still bear her weight. But for how long? Paul looked across the practice area at the blood running down her leg.
Second blood to me.
He tossed the Derringer aside and rushed forward again, brandishing his sword. Anya met him halfway.
You won't get me that way.
Around and around they went, neither of them gaining any significant advantage, their blades ringing as though they had voices of their own as they came in contact with each other. They broke apart, sweat mixed with blood on Paul's face, giving his features an almost demonic cast. Anya was favoring her left leg, the blood flowing a little more freely from all the exertion. The adversaries slowly circled each other, watching, waiting, looking for that perfect moment to strike. This time, Anya struck first, dropping into a very low back stance, her blade lashing out at Krugman's knees. He, in turn, leaped up, jumping over her blade. His slashed down, embedding the tip of the blade in the wood of the deck. If Anya had still been there, she would have been carved in two. But she wasn't, having spun away before her sword finished its horizontal cut, knowing she'd already missed. They closed with each other again. Their blades locked together once more. She didn't see his haymaker come swinging in past her defenses. Pain exploded across Anya's face, momentarily blinding her. And in that moment, as brief as it was, Paul struck. His sword lashed out point first. Anya twisted away as fast as she could. Rather than skewer her lung, the blade carved a furrow across her rib cage, but did not sink home. Anya shook the pain and the tears out of her eyes. She saw Krugman launch another attack. She rolled, twisting her shoulder in the midst of a somersault so that she came back up in a crouch. Anya was feeling the pain of her injuries now, was aware that she was starting to slow from the blood loss, and knew that she had to end the contest quickly or face the very real chance that she might not survive. She exaggerated her weakness, dragging her leg behind her. When Paul came in again with another flashing dervish of strikes, Anya parried them all, but let them look a little bit sloppy, a little slower than usual. Paul grinned at her and took the bait, driving in hard again, obviously thinking that at last he could overwhelm her effective defenses. As he came in with a horizontal strike designed to cut her in two, Anya let go of her blade. She tossed it straight up into the air, the sun glinting off the plain, unadorned hilt. As the blade went up, Anya went down, dropping below the slash of Paul's sword, falling backward in a limbo-like maneuver to give room for the blade to pass by. Paul's eye went up, watching her sword, the follow-up to his own strike forgotten in that instant. Anya caused the sword to vanish into the otherwhere. In the space of the next heartbeat, she called it back. Her hand was already in mid-swing with a perfectly timed blow targeted at Paul's midsection just below the ribcage. He realized his mistake too late. He tried to counter. Anya's sword cut him open from one side to the other. Paul died with a surprised expression on his face, as if he couldn't believe that he'd been bested by the woman he'd duped so cleverly for so long.
Good riddance.
When their leader was cut down by her blade, Anya was relieved that the rest of the thugs aboard the yacht showed their true colors and surrendered like the cowards that they were. Only Colonel Schnell displayed a bit of fight, but he was just one man, and a 95-year-old one at that. and he was quickly subdued and disarmed when he tried to use one of the guards' guns before they surrendered. The aircraft Anya and her team had lifted out of the lake was seized by the government in Berlin. Brandt's and Adler's remains were retrieved from the lake and also returned to Germany for appropriate burial. The Junker gold was identified as belonging to the Hungarian National Bank, as Anya had suspected. The bank, of course, laid claim to it as soon as word of its existence leaked, and was backed up by the court ruling that quickly followed. Anya did receive a 5% finder's fee, which she promptly donated, not wanting to profit from something the Nazis had once stolen. In her subsequent conversations with the media, she didn't mention Wolf Island or the gold, and neither did Garin. Krugman's boat, with his body aboard, had been quietly scuttled in the deep water off Wolf Island, so no explanations were needed on that score either. That was how Anya wanted it, and this time Garin was inclined to go along with her. Matahi and his people were free of outside influence for the first time in more than 70 years. Both Anya and Garin thought they deserved every chance to restore the way of life they'd known before the Nazis arrived. One day she might return, just to explore the base fully. But as far as she was concerned, the gold still hidden on the island, which might or might not be there, could stay lost. There was too much blood on it already.
Rogue Angel, Beneath Still Waters is a Graphic Audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used by others under license. Copyright 2015, Worldwide Library. Production copyright, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Nanette Savard as the narrator, Colleen Delaney as Anya Creed, Jonathan Foyer as Paul Krugman, Terrence Aselford as Garin, with Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, and Lily Beacom. Directed by Timothy Lynch. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Justin Wirtz. Graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Tracy Cochran. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Eileen Wilkes' The World of the Lupi series and other great titles available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. In Prague, researching the legend of the Golem, a fantastical living creature made of clay, archaeologist Anya Creed tackles a bigger mystery when someone begins murdering the homeless, leaving a fresh corpse every day. As the suspicion that the Golem is behind the deaths circulates quietly on the streets of the city, Anya cannot resist unraveling the thread binding science to superstition. According to Czech history, these aren't new attacks. They're part of a greater pattern of murders that have gone unacknowledged over centuries. Now Anya finds herself the next target. Can she find the real monster behind the myth before it finds her? Don't miss Rogue Angel number 56, The Mortality Principle. Coming soon from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1 800 670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.